From an unpublished 20-page account left by Cox's estate, it's possible to reconstruct what happened next. Cox was sent to the tightly guarded Ringway training facility near Manchester, where at first he couldn't understand why he was marching amid dozens of tough paratroopers. After all, he'd never been in an airplane and was afraid of exposed heights. Then, in an awful moment, he realized he was in training with them because he was going to be in on their assault. Someone had to supervise the disassembly of the Würzburg radar if it was going to be captured and brought to England. And on this short notice, his experience as an amateur radio operator meant he was the best the War Office could get. After the rush course in parachuting, Cox, still in his RAF uniform, was bundled off to Salisbury Plain for an even more rushed course in assault techniques. Some of it he enjoyed, not least the way that anything he asked for was given to him: binoculars, a compass, clean boots, even a smart new Colt 45. Some of the course was more distressing, as when he found out how the Scottish troops he was training with practiced crossing a barbed wire emplacement. Instead of bringing out wire cutters, as he expected, they simply had one of the men stretch out on the uncut wire to form a human ramp. The rest of the men then crunched over him. None of the officers explained to Cox how difficult the operation was likely to be. They would have only relatively light weapons, and prior airborne operations had proven far more difficult than expected. The parachute assault took place on the night of February 27, 1942. The Würzburg set they were coming to get began tracking them when they were still 20 miles out, sending fast rippling invisible waves up into the dark air. When the approximately 100 men jumped, about 24 of the team were blown hopelessly off course, coming down miles away, but the bulk of the force landed safely in the target zone. After the usual ritual upon landing, blissfully relieving themselves of the tea they'd drunk in the hours before boarding their planes, the assembled troops walked quickly toward the chateau that overlooked the Würzburg radar. Cox followed, pushing the little wheeled trolley the planners in London had decided he should use to carry the captured radar parts on. Only a few of the defenders were at the chateau itself, but the German radar operator had understood why so many glowing dots on his screen were heading his way. The main group of German troops had been warned and were either in ambush positions or trying to get there. A series of firefights began, and at that moment Cox realized he had to move quickly. There were likely to be hidden explosive charges that could detonate the Würzburg, and Tate would definitely think badly of Cox if that happened. So now Cox hurried forward in the dark, amid the firing, and got over the barbed wire around the set to help find and disarm those charges. He recognized a suspicious moving shadow and thereby helped, most politely, to capture the German radar operator who was running away. He directed the British troops in the use of crowbars to snap loose electronic parts from the Würzburg and calmly made sure they also collected the serial numbers of any replacement pieces. He was so worried by what might happen if he arrived back without enough samples that even as the German troops approached and mortar attacks began, and while the main paratrooper force had to rush from the Würzburg earlier than planned, he kept at work until he was sure key parts of the swinging curved antenna had been sawed loose. There was supposed to be an easy scramble down to the beach, but the men who had been allocated to cover this escape were precisely the ones who had been blown off course on landing. A German machine gun crew started firing at the British, which further worried Cox. As a result, he directed the men to shift the Würzburg parts from the trolleys to backpacks, thus ensuring that none of the electronics were damaged, and he also seems to have helped tend the wounded. Just when it looked as if the entire assault team might be overrun, there were sudden shouts of Kabar Feda as the lost Scott Highlander covering party finally arrived. The German machine gunners decided that escape into a convenient ravine was wiser than facing any more of these shouting troops. The raiding force at last made it down to the beach. The Royal Navy wasn't there, however, and increasingly urgent radio messages and even bright flares didn't seem to help. But as the headlights from German trucks appeared near the clifftop above, the Navy's landing craft arrived, lots of them, and their heavier guns meant the fresh enemy troops above would be no problem. Most of the escaping troops were left to wallow all the way back to England in the unwieldy landing craft, though they were given rum once aboard. But Cox was taken aside and quickly transferred to a speedboat, then led roaring at over 20 knots toward Portsmouth, with two Royal Navy destroyers nearby, and soon a flight of Spitfires giving further cover overhead. He made it ashore, was given a fast motorcade ride to London, and, after a quick debriefing and delivery of the precious Würzburg parts, was granted as much leave as he wanted. By midnight, he'd made it all the way to his home in the small town of Wisbech in East Anglia. There was one fire in the house, and his father, mother, grandparents, wife, and toddler child were waiting for him around it. Cox marched in, and, as he remembered, "Hello, family," I said. "I've been in France, that's where I've been, and it's in the London newspapers tonight. How about that, then?"